So I'm still in Cleveland for another month or so. What should I visit, do, or try out? Also, what's the Blue Jackets playoff schedule? I might scoot down there for a game.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. The NBA regular season is over. NBA fantasy is over for another season, but this podcast doesn't stop. We're going to be looking at plenty of things: real life basketball, fantasy basketball, dynasty stuff, forward projections, looking back on what we got right, what we got wrong, all of that sort of stuff. So make sure you're not going anywhere. Keep subscribing to the podcast either by using the new Himalaya podcast app or your regular apps that you've been using. But I do highly recommend a switch to the Himalaya podcast app. Find me on YouTube, subscribe so we never miss these episodes through the coming months over summer. Going to be tons of great content coming for you today and in the future. And on today's show, what I'm going to be doing is going through my playoff picks, my playoff predictions, looking back at my award predictions from the start of the season, and then who I would give my awards to now, giving the results of the over-unders that we did in the preseason as well, and just talking about some general news that did go on in the NBA over the last 24 hours. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
That's right. Let's get to it indeed. We'll start just by looking at some of the firings and hirings that have occurred in the NBA over the, I was going to say last 24 hours, it's probably over the last 6 hours that most of these have gone down. Some of them are relatively expected, a couple of them are a little bit surprising. Let's start in Cleveland, where Larry Drew was fired, but sort of not really fired. It was a mutual parting of the ways. We remember at the start of the season when Ty Lue was fired in Cleveland that Drew was quite reticent to take on the job. He didn't like the title being given to him. There was, you know, he was a caretaker coach for a while and then was given the coaching job for the year. So it never felt like he was going to remain in charge there past this season. That's good, because he's not a very good coach. I like the list of names that the Cavs have been putting out. They're really mining the player development assistant coach route in terms of getting someone in to help develop these young guys like the Padawan Colin Sexton, like whatever they do in the lottery this year, at getting it in a young developmental path. That's really a positive thing for them. You know, instead of going for a Jason Kidd or a Mark Jackson or whatever other hopeless retread coaches that may be out there. So Drew is gone in Cleveland. That's a positive for someone like Larry Nance if you have him in a dynasty league, because we know outside of the last month of the season, Drew was dicking him around significantly, playing 38 minutes of Tristan Thompson and 17 minutes of Larry Drew. Was never conducive to a young team trying to build up a guy who they'd given an extension to, whether you think that extension was right or wrong. The thought process about the coaching around Nance was incredibly frustrating. So I think there's some light at the end of the tunnel there for a pretty big season coming for Larry Nance. But of course, the new coach could come in and completely hate him even more than Drew, although that seems a little unlikely. In Sacramento, probably the biggest surprise of the day is the firing of Dave Yeager. Brandon Williams was also always let go, but we can talk about Yeager, and I've talked negatively about Yeager in the past as in terms of him as a coach. I've praised him this season for some of the work he's done, but I've also been critical of some of the things he's done this season. But in the end, the way that the season ended, it was a negative for Sacramento. They did really struggle down the stretch, but it wasn't just his on-court stuff that got him fired. It was the constant butting of heads with him and his players. It's been a noted thing. He's quite stubborn. And the front office, the comments, you know, publicly about Luka Doncic early in the season, where he was, you know, pretty obviously lamenting the fact that they didn't draft Doncic and then had to backtrack and really go the old Dutch rudder on Marvin Bagley multiple times to try and make up for it. The constant headbutting between Vlade Divac and Dave Yeager was pretty apparent earlier in the season. All those reports coming out about Yeager looking to be fired by that front office, including by Brandon Williams, and the leaking and the discussions and the butting of heads there seemed pretty clear. And as soon as Vlade got his GM extension, which I'm not sure I fully agree with that, Divac has made some pretty poor decisions in terms of the GM role, actually doesn't know what he's doing. A lot of it has improved, no doubt about that, but has made some curiously poor decisions. We know the Sacramento-Philadelphia trade, The Zach Randolph, George Hill deals were pretty poor. Yes, you're drafting De'Aaron Fox was a good decision. That's fine. It was pretty much a no-brainer at that point. I didn't agree with the Bagley choice, but the fact that he got those two guys, who are foundational pieces for this team now, is all to do with lottery luck. They weren't in that position. They jumped up to get into those spots to draft those guys, and I still think that the choice of Bagley was a wrong one by D-Bats. But as soon as he got that extension, given the tension between him and Jaeger, Jaeger was always going to be in trouble. It has a little bit of a feel of Vlade thinking it's similar to the Mark Jackson in Golden State scenario, where, okay, he's improved us, but can he take us any further? We also don't like the negativity that surrounds him in some of his interactions with staff and players, so let's get rid of him. What decision they make next is obviously really key. But I can get behind this move, despite the big improvement that Sacramento made this season. It was a huge improvement, no doubt about that. But I understand the thought process, not that I'm necessarily 100% behind Vlade's decision-making in general. In Memphis, JB Bickerstaff was fired and Chris Wallace, their GM, was demoted. These are both absolutely 100% the correct decisions. Now, in general, I'm not a fan of firing a coach after giving them one season. But there's a couple of things here with Bickerstaff. He was the coach for most of last season after Fizdale was fired. Didn't do anything interesting at all to make me think that he deserved the job. They gave him the job after interviewing exactly zero candidates. It made no sense to do that. They signed him to a multi-year deal, which never made really any sense. And he was poor at he was bad at coaching this season. Poor rotational decisions at times, poor minutes distribution, limiting Jaren Jackson Jr. when it really wasn't necessary, playing Chandler Parsons at small forward over Kyle Anderson at the beginning of the season. Lots of curious decisions from Bickerstaff, which were apparent. If you saw his coaching in Houston or his coaching in Memphis last season, you realize he is not an NBA caliber head coach. It was really clear. And to hire him without any sort of search process or interviewing any other candidates is just an example why some bad teams, and the Grizzlies have had some good moments, but bad teams remain bad teams because of piss poor processes and ownership that makes either the wrong investments or medals. And that seems to be the case in Memphis. Now, Chris Wallace has been demoted from his GM role. They've brought in promoted a couple of guys in-house to new positions there. Now, whether they remain as the sole basketball decision makers remains to be seen. Zach Kleiman is currently the guy who's in charge of basketball decision making, or they look to get another GM in. That does remain to be seen. But I think this is the right decision. Now, there is some rumblings that Igor Kokoshkov could be fired in Phoenix, and after one season, I think that would be an absolutely terrible move for them to do it. But the Bickerstaff one, I totally get it, because it's not just about what are the results on the court, it's about the process you get to those results, the decision making that you make along the way. And I think Bickerstaff has failed that at every opportunity that he has had. In Phoenix, speaking about hiring people without any interview process, James Jones has been named the permanent GM. The fact that Ryan McDonough was fired in the start of October and the Suns never had a permanent GM all season, we just had Jones acting in that interim position, was ridiculous in itself. They hired Jeff Bauer to be the executive vice president of basketball operations, so the overseer of all basketball decisions. I'm not a massive fan of Bauer and his work in Detroit, and even less of a fan of just hiring Jones without interviewing any other GM candidates. Now, Jones, you can say that he's got good relationships around the NBA with players, and that's fine. He seems like a ripper bloke. I'm not sure that he has the acumen to be a GM at this point. Some of his decision-making has been curious, to say the least. The Kelly Oubre trade, I did like that from him. But I'm not sure that every decision that he made has been great, or that he does have that understanding. You're giving away that 2021 Miami first round pick was not the greatest use, although that wasn't really him, that was McDonough. So to be fair to Jones, although he did have input in that because he was working in that office. The Tyler Johnson deal, not a massive fan of that one. I don't really understand that trade from the Suns' perspective, from Jones, but he is in that job. And look, he does get a bit of a benefit of the doubt here, even though I'm not confident in him, but it's more the process that I'm querying with Phoenix. And again, that's when we talk about bad teams staying bad. Robert Sarver, he is the main ingredient in that in Phoenix, and that's where we're currently at with that Phoenix Suns team. I didn't expect to be talking for that long on all the hirings and firings that happened. This was an impromptu part of this show. We had other stuff we're going to get to, so let's get to that other stuff now. Let's look at the NBA awards. You can see up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube all my award decisions there. I'm going to go through each of these awards, the six main awards we're going to be talking about here. what my preseason predictions were, or guesses were, well, that is a prediction, and how I would if I had a hypothetical vote. NBA, if you're listening, I'd happily take a vote, and I will be very, very serious about my awards votes if you wanted to give me one, but I'm sure you won't. In the preseason, I had my MVP top three as Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. They were my top three MVP picks at the beginning of the season. At this point in the season, it's obviously really hard to separate Giannis and James Harden. I did go with Giannis as the MVP, Harden as number two, and Paul George as number three. The reason for me having Giannis over Harden, now Harden's offensive impact is beyond reproach. He has been unbelievable in getting his team from where they were at the start of the season, which some of that blame does go on him, to push into that spot where they had a chance at the 2 seed, unfortunately falling all the way down to the 4 seed because of the craziness from Wednesday. But defensively, Giannis brings it offensively. He's important. He's not as good as Harden offensively. We know that. But the significant difference between Giannis defensively and Harden defensively puts Gianni into that position to me, carrying this Bucks team, not on his own, with other talented players around, obviously. And he probably had a better supporting cast than Harden. I would take Giannis. But look, if Harden end up winning the award, which I don't think he will, but if he does, I think it's 100% deserved and absolutely no problem with it. I wouldn't be, oh, that's bullshit, Giannis needs the award. I'm not like that. Same as if Harden gets it. There are certain situations where I would be like that. But for MVP, these guys are really close. And I slotted Paul George in there at number three. I think, look, he had struggled a little bit at the start of the season, dropped off at the end of the year. But I do think that over the course of the season, that he is probably that third guy over the course of the year. The other guy I'd debate there is Nikola Jokic, perhaps. Again, just dropped off a little bit at the end of the season, but he would be the other guy that I would have had in that discussion for the third place MVP vote. At the start of the season for Rookie of the Year, I had DeAndre Ayton as number one, Luka Doncic as number two, and Trae Young as number three. I thought that Ayton would go out there and put up a lot of big numbers, perhaps, you know, get to the 20-10 type of average, play a lot of minutes. His minutes were a little bit fewer than I thought they would be this year. His impact defensively, he struggled, which we thought he would. He wasn't quite at that same level, whereas Doncic, they gave him the ball straight away. His usage, free throw rate, all that sort of stuff was massive for a rookie. I thought maybe they'd just cut him back a little bit, ease him in. We know that Rick Carlisle has been a little bit skeptical about using rookies, but I guess when you've got one that's historically good like Doncic, you give him the ball. So in the end, my Rookie of the Year goes to Luka Doncic. I have Trae Young at number two, and I have Ayton at number three. I think I would have had Jaren Jackson Jr. at number three had he played for the remainder of the season, but because Ayton was good offensively, again, some of the Kokoschkov stuff with him was frustrating in terms of not getting him the ball. Some of that's on Ayton, some of that's on Kokoschkov, some of that's on Booker and the other point guard play. Defensively, he struggled a lot, and I think he's going to continue to struggle in his career. But offensively, he put up some really good numbers. So he's in at number three there. I won't entertain any debate about Trae Young being the Rookie of the Year over Doncic, although Young was unbelievably good for, you know, the last 3 months of the season, maybe 3.5 months. Excellent in a regular season, in a season that didn't involve someone like Luka Doncic. Young would probably be the Rookie of the Year. Now, would he have been it last season over Simmons and Mitchell? I probably still would have had Simmons over him. Him and Mitchell was an interesting discussion. The year before, Brogdon, he's a clear Rookie of the Year winner in that year. Michael Carter-Williams here, clear Rookie of the Year winner in that year. And maybe even going back to the Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard year, maybe you'd even have Trae Young as Rookie of the Year in that year. But for this season, I'm going with Doncic as my Rookie of the Year, yeah, pretty clearly over Trae Young. Most Improved Player, my three picks at the beginning of the season, Tobias Harris, Taurean Prince, and Caris LeVert. Toby Harris had a great season. Probably didn't take as big a step forward as necessary to win this award. Taurean Prince, that was a shit pick for me, obviously, because he was a disaster this season. And my hopes with him in terms of his prospect value have really declined. And Caris LeVert, well, that was looking like a really prescient pick at the beginning of the season. I think really at the beginning of the season, I had actually DeJounte Murray in that spot, and then he tore his ACL just before I recorded that award prediction show. Slotted LeVert in there, and before his injury, LeVert was looking like, you know what, he's going to be in realistic discussion for this award, but of course, hurt his ankle, dislocated his ankle, missed the chunk of the season, came back at the end, and wasn't the same guy. Now, for my Most Improved Player awards, now that the season is done, I'm going with Pascal Siakam, a pretty clear number one there winner. Nikola Vucevic is number two. Vuce was the main reason the Orlando Magic are in the playoffs. in that seventh seed spot. He took big steps forward defensively, offensively, efficiency-wise. He was absolutely massive for this team. Stayed healthy all season, got his first All-Star nod. He deserves that nod there. And D'Angelo Russell comes in at number three. First All-Star for him as well. Stayed healthy, which has been a problem for Russell over the course of his career. Really took the reins of this Brooklyn team, established himself as the starting point guard over Spencer Dinwiddie, getting the majority of those minutes. And when LeVert went down, he really stepped up his game. Also, an honorable mention to Yusuf Nurkic, who I could have had in there at any point. I think his improvement was absolutely massive this season. It doesn't really get talked about that much, but his ability to step forward offensively and defensively and make himself the clear number two player on that Portland team was massive. Unfortunately, he won't be playing in the playoffs, and it's going to really hamstring them for the rest of this season and probably for the most of next season. Sixth man of the year. At the beginning of the season, I had Tyreke Evans at number one. Yuck. He was absolutely piss poor in Indiana after a great season in Memphis. I envisaged him playing more minutes than Darren Collison, running the closing lineup with Victor Oladipo, really dominating that second unit and then closing the game. Very similar to the way that Lou Williams runs things with the Clippers, but he just couldn't get his head around a new role. He didn't seem to fit with Nate McMillan. He had disciplinary issues there as well. An absolute disaster of a season from Tyreke. Hashtag contract year. Lou Williams, I had at number two, and Julius Randle at number three. Now, Randle, I thought they'd keep him on the bench, which they should have, but then the Mirotic injury did change that, and in the end, I think he started too many games to be eligible for six men. He played well offensively, Randle. His defensive stuff was still really, really bad, and I just don't understand the fit of him and Anthony Davis in that front court. That never made any sense. Mirotic wouldn't have been much better, and so even when he came back from injury and before the trade, they should have been starting Nikola over Julius Randle. In terms of my end of season six man, I am giving it to Lou Williams marginally. This is one that I agonized over pretty much the most out of all these awards. Williams does great stuff offensively. Defense is still a massive, massive issue for him. Number two, I went with Domantas Sabonis in Indiana. Somehow he was able to make it. The team was better with him on the court versus when he was off the court. And the amazing thing about that is the guy ahead of him, Miles Turner, the team was also better with Miles Turner on the court versus off. So it wasn't like some of those on-off stuff could be, oh, well, the guy in front of you really struggles. And some of that for Lou Williams with Avery Bradley ahead of him, his on-off stuff looks significantly better because of how bad Bradley was in that role as a member of the Clippers. But for Sabonis to be as positive as he is with good defensive stuff, his advanced defensive numbers were impressive somehow. I don't know how because he doesn't block shots really. But those numbers did really work in his favor. I thought that was really impressive for Sabonis. So he's a really close second. And then weirdly that you can have two sixth men on one team when, you know, by definition you can't. So the seventh man of the year is the table, Montrezl Harrell. Again, it does help that the guy that was ahead of him, Marcin Gortat, for most of the season is not an NBA caliber player, as we can tell by the fact that nobody signed him after he was cut. So Harrell comes in, plays those minutes, still had his defensive deficiencies as well. Spencer Dinwiddie, if he didn't get hurt for that big chunk of time, probably would have been in the discussion here, but to me, he just falls a little bit behind these three guys. Defensive player of the year, I went with Gobert in the preseason. I went with Joel Embiid 2 and Davis at 3. End of the season, Gobert, he gets the award for me there. Giannis comes in at number 2, and I have Miles Turner coming in at number 3. I thought Embiid, who I had at 2 in the preseason, took some steps back defensively this season, wasn't quite the dominating presence that he was there in the past. Giannis took a big step forward, and Miles Turner was massive. Not only were Turner's blocks really up there, but he provided a great defensive presence, which in the past he hasn't quite been that defensive guy. So they're my top three defensive player of the year guys. Coach of the year, I had Quinn Snyder in the preseason, Kenny Atkinson at number 2, and Mike Budenholzer at number 3. In the end, I'm really, really happy with those preseason picks. It's not the guys I went for at the end of the season, but all of those you could make arguments for as coach of the year. In the end, my coach of the year is Mike Budenholzer. Michael Malone, the doctor, comes in at number 2, still makes some poor decisions, but I like the way he handled what were potentially big landmines with the Isaiah Thomas situation, Will Barton situation. I think, yeah, the injury to Barton and Thomas, they did help Malone in some of his decision-making. I didn't have full trust in him, but even when they came back, he was able to navigate that. Injuries to Gary Harris as well. He did really well to get the Nuggets where they are. And Nick Nurse, I had at number 3. Now, I could have put Atkinson there, and maybe I probably should have, but the fact that Nurse, first-time head coach, integrating a guy like Kawhi Leonard, dealing with a team that lost a franchise legend in DeMar DeRozan, and getting the team to be as good as they were while preserving health throughout the season is a real testament to him and to the players and to Masai Ujiri. And if I had an executive of the year, Ujiri would be executive of the year. pretty comfortably there. So they are my awards preseason and end of season. I'm sure you're going to let me know if you agree or disagree in the comments below or on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Let's look at some more fantasy-specific awards. Now, my fantasy MVP is James Harden, the number one player this season, really without any doubt at all. If you look at overall Z-score value, which that's a sum of standard scores across the categories, he finished with a score of 1.68. The next highest guy, 1.23. So that is a really significant margin there. The difference between Harden and Davis, who is the number two on a per-game value, is a 0.45. And the difference, that same gap is the difference between Giannis at number three and Nikola Vucevic at number 14. That's how big of a gap Harden put in those guys. 36, 6.5, and 7.5, almost five threes, two steals, and 0.7 blocks. Massive free throw percentage value. Field goal percentage, a huge amount of attempts, 41% usage. That field goal percentage was low, and it did hurt a bit in that category, but he's still my fantasy MVP. My fantasy rookie of the year is DeAndre Ayton, the 41st ranked player over the course of the season. You had Doncic and Trae Young come in just behind him. He averaged 16 and 10 in only 31 minutes with a steal and a block on 59 and 75% shooting. So you can see the basis of a really good fantasy guy there. Get to 1.4 blocks, get to 20 and 12, which they're not crazy numbers. Maybe the 1.4 blocks is for him because he just can't do that. But that sort of level of efficiency from a rookie center is massive from Ayton, and he is, again, the 41st ranked player this season. He is your fantasy rookie of the year. The biggest steal in drafts, I went with the Italian cock, Danilo Gallinari, who had an ADP on Yahoo at number 130. He finished the season as the 37th ranked player. He is that guy that everyone avoided because he's injury prone. He's a guy that I told you guys you should be looking to target in later rounds, and it worked out very, very well to be a top 40 guy. He played 68 games. That's not too bad for him. He had a couple of rest games down the stretch. It would have been 70 plus. Really, really strong from Danilo Gallinari. The other guy in contention there was Pascal Siakam. Now, Siakam had an ADP of 141 with an end-of-season rank of 47. Now, the only reason I didn't give this to Siakam here is that in a lot of leagues, he wasn't drafted, and you see some of these Yahoo ADPs. It means like they were drafted, but in a majority of leagues, they weren't drafted, and I think Siakam was there. Now, he was a guy, again, in the preseason. I was all for taking a flyer in those last rounds. I predicted he would play more minutes than Serge Ibaka and establish himself ahead of Ibaka in the rotation. I did not expect this. I drafted him in the last round in two or three of my leagues, and it worked out really, really well for me. But I'm going with Gallinari as the steal of the year because he was drafted in the majority of leagues, whereas Siakam was not. The regular season MVP. Now, the way I'm doing this is looking at your standard playoff leagues, which started on the 12th of March. So before that, in terms of total value, who was the best ranked player in that regular season portion? Of course, it was Harden. And then I did a fantasy playoffs MVP, which is those 3 week standard playoffs from the 12th of March through to the 31st of March, who had the most cumulative value over that time frame. And again, it was James Harden, and the value difference he had in that time was even bigger than it was over the course of the season. I said that he had a 0.4 standard score buffer on the number two guy. In the fantasy playoffs, he had a 0.8 standard score buffer. The interesting thing, if we look at the top 12 guys fantasy playoffs-wise, just total value across the playoffs, there's some interesting names there, and it's not all just based on huge game volume, as everyone's like, man, you got to get the fantasy games and you got to get games played and you got to look at playoff schedule. Now, if I go through the top 12 of those guys, I think it's interesting. Harden comes in at number one and Damian Lillard comes in at number two. Both of those guys played 10 games throughout that playoff period. JaVale McGee comes in at number three, which is astonishing to me. He played 11 games during that time frame. Steph is number four. He played 9 games during that time frame. I think that's really, really curious to me is that Curry still, people would have been avoiding him. He's going to rest in fantasy playoffs. They've got a 2-game week. The fact that his total value over that time frame in 9 games still was 4th. Jokic was 5th with 11 games. Devin Booker with 6 was 6th with just 9 games played, which is pretty astonishing to me. Where else have we got? I'm just double checking my dates correct. Maybe I should just double check those dates, make sure they are actually correct. Right, just a slight correction. I was one day off on my dates for the fantasy playoffs. Now, it doesn't change anything with Harden being the number one guy. Let's go back through that list, though. Damian Lillard at number 2 with 10 games. McGee at number 3 with 11 games. Interesting one here. Bradley Beal is 4th with 12 games played over that time frame. So he was massive. He played those lot of games. Paul George at number 5 with 11 games. Curry at 6 with 9 games. Andre Drummond was 7th with 11 games. Jokic was 8th with 11 games. Booker was 9th with 9 games. Westbrook was 10th with 10 games. Interestingly that he was not a top 10 player during the season, but fantasy playoffs, he was there. Gobert was 11th with 11 games. And 12th was Gianni Antetokounmpo with 7 games played over that time frame. So it's not just all about value or fantasy playoff schedule, because there are plenty of guys who are in the top 50 who played 8 games. Durant, Butler, Kawhi. Now, they did fall off a bit with some of their games played, but guys like Joel Embiid was the 15th best player in the fantasy playoffs with 7 games played. Townsie was 14th with 9 games played. It does have an impact. The Rooster was 22nd and played just played 9 games in that fantasy playoff period. So while it does have an impact, it's not the be-all and end-all of everything. And those extra games can make a difference, no doubt about that. But someone like DJ Augustin, for example, had 9 games. Oh, the Magic's playoff schedule, it's terrible. He was the 70th ranked player in that playoff period, playing just 9 games and being DJ Augustin. Mitchie Robinson, 71st ranked player, 9 games during the fantasy playoffs. Now that's very, very interesting to me that is the way that it worked out. You got a guy playing 8 games over the fantasy playoffs in Dwayne Dedmon, who was the 84th ranked player, still putting up those numbers. Fred VanVleet, 8 games, the 94th ranked player. People would have been avoiding him because of a poor playoff schedule or injuries, all that sort of stuff. And there are ways where it works out in the opposite direction, where guys do struggle. They play more games and they can't really get it done in those extra games that they play. And that happens as well. But it's not something now. It is something you can pay attention to and take care of and make trades for and all that sort of stuff. But it is never a foolproof method by looking at playoff schedules, because again, people traded for Otto Porter because of his excellent playoff schedule. And then he was traded to Chicago and then he got injured, and players get injured and players get traded and players sit out and players go through cold streaks. And giving yourself the best chance of it is obviously important, but it's not the be all and end all, as I said. Now, if we're going to look at fantasy steal of the season, which we already have, let's look at the biggest bust. Now, I looked for guys here when deciding this, players who had an ADP inside the top 100. So I could look at Ryan Anderson, who had an ADP of 140, ridiculously, but he did. He was not drafted in majority of leagues, and he finished 474th. Yeah, that's a huge bust. But I want guys who were picked in the top 100 who failed to deliver the most, and the answer to that is Farton Will Barton, the 58th ranked player, ended up 196. Now, of course, injuries impacted him, but that 196th is not based on a total value. It's on a per-game value, and Barton obviously struggled. We talked about him the other day and how I didn't like how he was going to fit in this starting lineup. The hip injury obviously wrecked him quite a bit, and it was a terrible season from him. The other guys in contention for that, Gary Harris, of course, at 168th, Barton's teammate.
No!
The injuries for him played a big part, but also his efficiency was down, his steal rate was down, his usage, his scoring, all that stuff was well down from where it was. Dwight Howard was drafted 68th. He was bad in his time frame. Yes, the injuries played a part there, but this is not just about, this is on per game basis, not on a total value basis. Dario Saric would come in next. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic would come in next. Two guys who I actively avoided in drafts. So that actually worked out pretty well in my behalf there. Brandon Ingram was drafted 78th and ended up 160th. Gordon Hayward, 54th and ended 128th. He was not great. The pencil Harrison Barnes at 79 and Dennis Smith at 85. Both of those guys had their struggles. Barnes should never have been going that high. Timmy Hardaway at 75, Andy Wiggins at 85, and the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, who I really missed on this season. He was also one of the biggest busts this season. So they are your awards of the year. Let's have a look at the over and unders for the season and have a look how all that went. In the end, let's have a look. I got 15, nailed 15 of the over unders. Greg Ehrenberg, who did the show with me.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous. Yeah.
He ended up getting 16 of his over-unders right. So it wasn't it was an okay season, wasn't a great season. But for our best bets, we offered out 5 best bets over-unders. We nailed 4 of those each. So that was a really good return, what we did there. So let's go through each of these teams and have a look. For the Hawks, their over-under was 24.5. I went the over on that one, ended up being correct. Pretty comfortably. They got 29 wins, the Atlanta Hawks. The Boston Celtics, 57.5 was their over-under. I went the under on that, obviously correct on that by a significant margin. They finished with just 49 wins. The Nets, this is one I really screwed up. The Nets had a 31.5 over-under, and I went under. Thinking back, I'm not really sure how I did that. They smashed that. 42 wins they ended up getting, so I got that one wrong. The Hornets had a ridiculously low over-under of 35.5. I went over, I got that correct. They ended with 39 wins. The Cavs, 30.5. I went the over on that. Obviously massively off there, 11 games off they had. They won just 19, but I think if Kevin Love had have stayed healthy, which of course is a big if, they would have gotten at least closer to that, but it didn't happen, so I missed out on the Cavs. Actually, the Bulls, talk about that one. The Bulls had a 28.5. Over under. I went over. I don't know why I went over. I thought they were going to be terrible. I don't know why I ended up going the over on them. That was obviously incorrect. They finished with just 22 wins. The Mavs, 34.5. I went the under on that one. I got that one right. I think only just that I got that one right. Yeah, they had just the 33 wins. The Nuggets, 46.5, went over. I was massive on the Nuggets heading into the season. Smashed that over. Got that one right. The Pistons, 38.5. Went the over on that one as well. They got to 41 wins, so got that right. Looking back at some of these, I'm thinking, what was I thinking? The Warriors, 63.5. I went over. I don't know why I went over. That is such a huge win total. That is a poor decision from me. The Rockets, 55.5. I thought that number appeared way too low. In the end, it was too high, amazingly, after they won 60 games last season. So I went the over on the Rockets, got that right. The Pacers, 46.5. I was expecting some Oladipo regression. I got that. But somehow they still went over the 46.5, so I got that one wrong. The Clippers, 35.5, went over. That was an easy call, got the correct there. The Lakers, under 48.5, I went under there as well, got that one correct. And the Grizzlies, 33.5, I went over and got that one wrong too. Couldn't really bank in, well, I probably should have banked in how poor of a coach Bickerstaff was, but I thought getting a healthy Conley and Gasol back, which they did, would push them over. Unfortunately, they didn't get there. They started out really well. They faded, and they ended up just a half game out of that one. So I feel like I'm a little bit unlucky not getting that one there for the Grizzlies. The next guys we look at, the Miami Heat, they were 40.5. I went the over on that. I missed that by a game and a half. They won 39, so I got that one wrong. I don't get what I did here. The Bucks, 46.5. I went under. That was massively incorrect. That was a terrible decision from me. The Wolves, 44.5. I went under. That was pretty clear, especially with the Jimmy Butler news that they were going to go under. They just had 36 wins. The Pelicans, 44.5. I went under on that one. That was a little bit ballsy of me at the time. Got that one correct. The Knicks, 29.5. The easiest bet on the board. Under. Smash that one. The Thunder, 49.5. I went over. Got that wrong. They won 49, so that's two of the ones that I've missed. I've missed by half a game. The Magic, 30.5. I went under there. Now, they obviously made me look silly winning 42 games. I just did not see this level of improvement, so kudos to Steve Clifford and to the Magic team. The Sixers, I went 54.5. I went the over. Missed that one as well. It's probably a poor decision in hindsight. The Suns, 29.5 under. As easy a call as you'd want to get. Got that one correct. The Blazers, 42.5. I went the under. I thought they would drop off dramatically. They didn't. They got better. Huge performance from Lillard and Stotts and Nurkic to get them to that level, so massive from them. And of course, I really missed the Kings. I went under 26.5 with Sacramento. I thought they'd be one of the worst teams in the NBA. So I got that one wrong. The Spurs, I went under 44.5. They made me look silly. They started out pretty poorly, but really fired up at the end of the year on some really crazy two-point shooting. So I got that one wrong. Raptors, over 54.5. Got that one right, so I'm happy with that. They won 58. The Jazz, 48.5 over. Got that one right by a game and a half. And then the Wizards, under 44.5, seemed pretty easy as well. And they got only 32, so got that one correct. So in the end, getting 15 right. Now, my best bets were the Knicks under, got it. The Clippers over, got it. The Nuggets over, got it. The Grizzlies over, missed it by half a game. And the Suns under. So 4 of 5 of my best bets came good. So let's have a look now at how the playoff matchups are going to go, who I'm going to pick in how many games for this first round playoff matchups. looking at the Eastern Conference, I think the Bucks are going to sweep the Pistons 4-0 in this round. Now, we don't know the status of Nikola Mirotic. Malcolm Brogdon, I doubt, will play. Tone Snell should be back, but I think the Bucks have enough in them to beat this Pistons team, who's struggled so much down the stretch and literally might be without Blake Griffin for one or two of these games. So I think the Bucks can really put it to the Pistons here, and this should be a short series. The Raptors against the Magic. I think if any of these top teams are going to lose, and I don't like to say this, I think the Magic can give the Raptors some problems. Now, they beat them a couple of times in the regular season. Yes, without Kawhi Leonard, but I think that this goes to six. I think the Raptors win 4-2, so Raptors in six in this one. But if any of these teams are going to lose, any of these top three teams in the East, I think it is going to be the Raptors. I don't think it'll happen, but I think I wouldn't be surprised. That's my, maybe there's an upset happening there for Orlando. The Sixers and the Nets, I've got the Sixers winning that in six. There was some cautionary comments from Elton Brand. It's talking about whether Joel Embiid will be back for the first playoff game. He was sort of optimistic but not fully committal, which was weird. Brett Brown sort of eased that off later on, but I'm still not 100% sure that that is going to be the case. I'm a little bit worried about the Sixers there. That's why I've gone Sixers in six. And then Celtics over Pacers. Now, the Celtics have struggled big chunks of this season. I've gone with Celtics in five here, because the Pacers have sort of limped to the finish line. Miles Turner dealing with an ankle injury, that's not really serious. But without Victor Oladipo, they just don't have the same punch. They enter the playoffs as one of the most not informed teams outside of, say, the Detroit Pistons, but really struggling in that regard. Yeah, you're going to have Kyrie, you're going to have Al Horford fully healthy, Haywood starting to look good. The problem here with the Celtics is Marcus Smart. Now, I talked about this last week, how I had the feeling that Brad Stevens was downplaying the Smart injury because they were trying to put some, you know, words or some, at least give the Pacers an idea that, no, Smart's going to be fine. When I expressed some doubts that he wouldn't be fine, well, he won't be fine. He'll miss this entire first round and probably most of the second round as well. I'm still having the Celtics in five just because of the Pacers. I just don't think have the firepower to get there. In the West, I think the Warriors can sweep the Clippers. Warriors in four. Now, they might take their foot off the gas in one game, but I think that they should pretty comfortably handle the Clippers here. The Nuggets in six over the Spurs. The Spurs have a chance to beat the Nuggets. The Nuggets have really limped to the finish line here, but I do think that Denver gets over the hump there. The Blazers and the Thunder, great effort from the Blazers to get here. Massive from Anthony Simons to get them that win to get into the three seed, but without Nurkic, with CJ McCollum still working his way back, I think the Thunder will win this in six. Not meaning to disrespect the Blazers. I just think the way that they match up. And look, the Thunder haven't been playing well. Paul George is dealing with a shoulder issue, missed that season finale. Steven Adams hurt his arm in that game as well. Westbrook makes questionable decisions at times. We know Dennis Schroeder can be relatively crazy in terms of his on-court play. So the Blazers have a chance, no doubt about that. I just think the Thunder get over the top here. And the Rockets, Jazz. I've got the Rockets winning that in six. I could see it pushing to seven, and I could see the result reversing and the Jazz winning in six as well. The Rockets, a very poor end to the season. But it is going to be interesting to see how, of course, all this pans out. Now, in the preseason, my initial pick was for the Warriors and the Raptors to make the finals, with the Warriors winning. I'll just stick with that at this point. And a few other predictions I made in the season. Now, my playoffs in the Western Conference, I got six of the eight teams right. I missed out on Portland. No, I didn't. I missed out on having the Spurs in there. I had the Pelicans and the Lakers in the playoffs. Obviously, they both didn't make it for numerous reasons. Obviously, some of that is self-inflicted and inflicted by both of them on each other. So I had both of those guys out of the playoff picture, and I had them in, and they shouldn't have been. And I had the Spurs and the Clippers out, so they would replace them. My top four was the Warriors, the Rockets, the Jazz, and the Nuggets. So I got three of the top four right. Utah pushing down to five, and Denver up to three. And then I had the Blazers in eight. Didn't expect them in the three seed. In the East, I got six of the eight right again. I had Toronto, Boston, Philly, Milwaukee. So the top four right, just not in order. And then I had Miami, Indiana, Washington, and the Pistons. Obviously, Miami and Washington not getting in there with Brooklyn and Orlando, two teams who are massively undersold in terms of their over-under, stepping up and getting into those positions that I had Miami and Washington holding. So that was how all my preseason playoff predictions looked. My worst five teams in the NBA at the start of the season, this is who I thought it would be: Sacramento, Phoenix, Atlanta, New York, and Chicago. So out of the actual bottom five teams in the NBA, I picked four of them. I had Sacramento in there, who shouldn't have been in there, whereas they should have been replaced by Cleveland. But the other four, Phoenix, Atlanta, New York, and Chicago, that's even why it's more baffling why I had the Bulls going over in there, over under. I don't know what I did there. But those other ones, they are the worst five teams in the NBA, and I picked four of those five. So the playoffs are going to be really interesting. See how the first round goes over the weekend. I'll be back next week with a lot of content, dynasty stuff. We're going to be doing NBA draft stuff coming up, team reviews, projection recaps, all that sort of stuff. So make sure you're staying tuned. Check us out on the Himalaya podcast app. Also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. And on YouTube, subscribe, hit the bell, never miss an episode. Give me that thumbs up and follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Channing Frye.